Mary Joseph Bible, as told by Mary Rates. Chapter 4, 2 Miles to a Bible. Mrs. Evans' farm was a curious old-fashioned place. The house was a large, rambling building with many strange ups and downs, with oddly shaped windows in all sorts of unexpected places. And yet there was an aspect of homely comfort about the house, not always to be found in far finer and more imposing-looking residences. At the back were the outbuildings, the sheds and cowhouses, the poultry pens, the stables and pigsties. While stretching away beyond these again were the home paddock, the drying ground, and a small enclosed field which went by the name of Hospital Meadow, on account of it being used for injured animals that needed rest. With the farmer himself, we made acquaintance 2 years ago at the meeting when he spoke so kindly to Mary. He was still the same good, honest, hard-working, God-fearing man, never forgetting in the claims and anxieties of his work what he owed to the giver of all who sends his rain for the watering of the seeds and his sun for the ripening of the harvest. Nor did he, as too many fathers were in the habit of doing, grumble at God's providences and find fault with God's dealings if the rain came down upon the hay before it was safely carried in, or if an early autumn gale flattened his wheat against the earth from which it sprang before the sickle could be put to it. Nor did he complain and grumble, even when disease showed itself amongst the breed of small but active cattle of which he was justly proud. And if it infected some of his fine sheep, which was destined for the famous Welsh mutton, he didn't complain. Often this mutton was to be found on English tables. In short, he was contented with what the Lord sent, and said with Job, when a misfortune occurred, "Shall we receive good at the hands of the Lord, and shall we not receive evil?" Of Mrs. Evans we have already spoken, and if we add here that she was a real help to her husband in matters both temporal and spiritual, that's all we need to say in her praise. This worthy couple had 3 children. The eldest was already grown up, a fine girl and a great comfort and help to her mother. The younger children were boys who went to a grammar school in a town a mile or two away. Manly, high-spirited little fellows, well trained, and as honest and true as their parents. Such, then, was the family into which Mary was welcomed with all love and kindness. She was shy and timid the first time, for the farmhouse was a much finer place than any home she'd seen before, and the delicious signs of plenty which were unknown in Jacob Jones' poor little cottage, where everything was most frugal. But Mary's shyness did not last long. Indeed, it disappeared soon after she'd crossed the threshold, where she was met by Mrs. Evans with a hearty welcome and a motherly kiss. "Come in, little one," said the good woman, drawing her into the cosy, old-fashioned kitchen, where a kettle was singing on the hob, and an enticing fragrance of currant shortcake baking for an early tea scented the air. "There, get warm, dear," said Mrs. Evans, "and you shall go to the parlour and study the Bible. And have you got a pencil and a scrap of paper to take notes if you want them?" "Yes, thank you, ma'am. I brought them with me," replied Mary. For a few minutes she sat there, basking in the pleasant, cheery glow of the firelight. Then she was admitted to the parlour, where on the table in the centre of the room, covered reverently with a clean, white cloth, was the precious book. It must not be thought, from the care that was taken of it, that the Bible was never used. On the contrary, it was always read at prayers at night, and in the morning, and the farmer, whenever he had a spare half-hour, liked nothing better than to study the sacred book and seek to understand its teachings. "There's no need to tell you to be careful of our Bible and turn over the leaves gently, Mary, I'm sure," said Mrs. Evans. "You would do that anyway, I know. And now, my child, I'll leave you and the Bible together. When you've learnt your lessons for Sunday school and read all you want, come back into the kitchen and have some tea before you go." Then the good farmer's wife went away, leaving Mary alone with the Bible for the first time in her life. The child raised the napkin at once and, folding it neatly, laid it to one side. Then, with trembling hands, she opened the book at the 5th chapter of John, and her eyes caught these words. Search the scriptures, for in them ye think ye have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me. I will, she cried, feeling as if the words were spoken directly to her by some divine voice. I will search and learn all I can. Oh, if I had but a Bible of my own. And this wish, this sigh for the rare and coveted treasure, was the keynote to a grand chorus of glorious harmony, which years after spread until it rolled in waves of sound over the whole earth. Yes, that yearning in a poor child's heart was destined to be a means of light and knowledge to millions of souls in the future. In this way, God has often chosen the weak things of the world to carry out his great designs and work his will. And here once more is an instance of the small beginnings which have great results, the importance of which cannot be calculated on this side of eternity. When Mary had finished studying the scripture lesson for the next day and had enjoyed a plentiful meal in the cosy kitchen, she said goodbye to her kind friends and set off on her homeward journey, her mind full of the one great longing out of which a resolution was slowly shaping itself. Was formed at last. I must have a Bible of my own, she said aloud, in the earnestness of her purpose. I must have one if I save for it for 10 years. And by the time this was settled in her mind, the child had reached her home. Christmas had come, and with it some holidays for Mary and the other pupils who attended the school at Aberdeen-Olwyn. Mary would only have been sorry for the end of the lessons had it not been that during the holidays she had determined to commence carrying out her plan of earning something towards the purchase of a Bible. Without neglecting her home duties, she managed to undertake little jobs of work for which the neighbours were glad to give her a little something. Sometimes it was to mind a baby while the mother was at the wash tub, maybe to pick up sticks and brushwood in the woods for fuel, or to help mend and patch the poor garments of the family for a worn and weary mother, who was thankful to give a small sum for this timely and welcome help. And every halfpenny, every farthing, was put into a rough little money box, which Jacob made for the purpose, with a hole in the lid. The box was kept in a cupboard on a shelf where Mary could reach it, and it was a real and heartfelt joy to her when she could bring her day's earnings, some little copper coins perhaps, and drop them in, longing for the time to come when they would have swelled to the amount needed, a large sum, unfortunately, for buying a Bible. It was about this time that a good Mrs. Evans, knowing the child's earnest wish, made her a present of a fine cockerel and 2 hens. "No, no, my dear, don't thank me," she said, when Mary was trying to tell her how grateful she was. "I've done it first to help you along with that Bible you set your heart on. And then too, because I love you and I like to give you pleasure. So now, my child, when the hens begin to lay, which will be early in the spring, you can sell your eggs, for these will be your very own to do what you like with, and you can put the money to any use you please. If I think I know what you'll do with it," added Mrs. Evans with a smile. But the first piece of silver that Mary had the satisfaction of dropping into her box was earned before she had any eggs to sell, and in quite a different way the sums which she had received until then. She was walking one evening along the road from Tarring, where she'd been sent on an errand for her father, when her foot struck against some object lying in the road. Stooping to pick it up, she found it was a large leather purse. Wondering whose it could be, the child went on a while, until within half a mile from home she'd met a man, walking slowly and evidently searching for something. She looked up as Mary approached, and she recognised him as Father Greaves, the brother-in-law of Mrs. Evans. "Ah, good evening, Mary Jones," said he. "I've had such a loss. Coming home from market, I dropped my purse." "And I've just found your purse, sir," said Mary. "Is this it?" "You found a purse?" exclaimed the farmer eagerly. "Yes, indeed, that is mine, and I'm very much obliged to you." "No, stay a moment," he called after her, for Mary was already trudging off again. "I should like to give you something for your honesty. I mean, just a small token, by way of thanks." and as he spoke, his fingers and thumb closed on a bright shilling. It surely would not have been too much to give to a poor child who had found a heavy purse. But he thought better or perhaps worse of it, and took out his feather sixpence and handed it to Mary, who took it with very heartfelt thanks and ran home as quickly as possible to drop her silver treasure safely into the box, where it was destined to keep its poorer brethren company for many a long year. But the Christmas holidays were soon over, and then it was difficult for Mary to keep up with her daily lessons and her Sunday school tasks, the latter involving the weekly visits to the farmhouse for the study of the Bible. But with these and her home duties, sometimes weeks passed without her having any time to earn a penny towards the purchase of her sacred treasure. Sometimes, too, she was rather late in reaching home on the Saturday evenings, and now and again Molly was uneasy about her, for Mary would come by shortcuts over the hills, along ways which, however safe in the daytime, were rough and unpleasant, if not dangerous after dark. And in those long winter evenings, the daylight vanished very early. It was on one of these occasions that Molly and Jacob Jones were sitting and waiting for their daughter. The old clock had already struck eight. She'd never been as late as this before. "Our Mary ought to be home, Jacob," said Molly, breaking a silence, disturbed only by the noise of Jacob's busy loom. "It's got as dark, and there's no moon tonight. The way's a rugged one if she comes to shortcut across the hill, and she's not one to choose a long road if she can find a shorter one. She's more than after her time. I hope no harm's come to the child." Molly walked out of the window and looked out. "Don't be fretting yourself, Molly," replied Jacob, pausing in his work. "Mary's out on a good errand, and he who put the love of good things in her heart will take care of her in the going out and in her coming in, from henceforth even for evermore." Jacob spoke solemnly, but with a tone of conviction that comforted his wife, as words of his often had done before. Just then a light step bounded up to the door, the latch was lifted, and Mary's young figure entered the cottage. Her dark eyes shining with intelligence, her cheeks flushed with the exercise, and a look of eager animation spreading the whole of her face. "Well, Charles, what have you learnt today?" questioned Jacob. "Have you studied your lesson for the Sunday school?" "Aye, Father, that I have. And a beautiful lesson it was," responded the child. "It was the lesson and Mr. Evans together that kept me so late." "How is that, Mary?" asked Molly. "We've been very uneasy about you, worried in case something had happened to you." "You needn't have been so worried, Mother," replied the child, with something of her father's quiet assurance. "God knew what I was about, and he would not let any harm come to me. Oh, Father, the more I read about him, the more I want to know, and I will not rest until I've got a Bible of my own. But today I brought home a big bit of the farmer's Bible with me." "What do you mean, Mary? How could you do such a thing?" questioned Molly in amazement. "Only in my head, Mother, of course," replied the child. And in my heart," she added to herself. "And what is the bit?" asked Jacob. "It's the seventh chapter of Matthew," said Mary. "Our Sunday lesson was from the first verse to the end of the 12th verse, but it was so easy and so beautiful that I went on and on till I'd learnt the whole chapter. And just as I finished, Mr. Evans came in and asked me if I understood it all. And when I said there were some bits that puzzled me, he was so kind and explained them. If you like, Mother and Father, I'll repeat the chapter to you." So Jacob pushed away his work and took his old seat in the chimney corner, and Molly began some knitting, while Mary sat down on a stool, and there, beginning at the first verse, she repeated the whole chapter, without a single mistake, without a moment's hesitation, and with a tone and emphasis which showed her understanding of the truths so beautifully taught, and her sympathy with them. "Mark my words, Mike," said Jacob that night when Mary had gone to bed. "That child will do her work for the Lord before she dies. Don't Don't you see how he himself is leading and guiding his lamb into green pastures and beside still waters? Why, Molly, when she repeated that verse, ask and ye shall receive, I saw her eyes shine and her cheeks glow, and I know she was thinking of that Bible that she set her heart on, which I don't doubt she's praying for often enough, and we know nothing about it. And the Lord, he will give it to her some day, of that I'm certain. Yes, Molly, our Mary will have her Bible.